Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks to Ben Ferguson and Chad Benson for filling my seat the past couple of days. We are brought to you today by Casper. Right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can get $50 off towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/lunch and using the promo code lunch at checkout. Terms and conditions do apply. More on that a little bit later in the podcast, Jim. And as we've mentioned a number of times when discussing the midterm elections, one of the best things we have going for us, we wish it was our record as conservatives and Republicans over the past couple of years, but no, it's the insanity of Democrats. And part of that insanity is putting up the same leaders the voters of this country have rejected time after time, and especially at the top of that list is Nancy Pelosi. She gave an interview to the Boston Globe on Tuesday, and here's part of the report that came out after that interview. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi stopped by the Globe on Tuesday with both her abilities and liabilities on display and delivered a confident but caveated electoral message. Further on, it says, to hear Pelosi tell it that victory is all but signed, sealed, and delivered. Quote, we will win. I will run for speaker, she said. I feel very confident about it. But what if Democrats don't regain the majority? Noting that U.S. Representative Jim Clyburn, the number three Democrat in the House, said recently that if they fail, the party's leadership team should resign. I asked Pelosi if she would step aside as Democratic leader if her party comes up short. She says, I can't even think about not winning. No, no, no. I can't even think about it. We have made a decision to win. We are going to win. So, Jim, they want to win, so therefore they should. And the best news for Republicans on the campaign trail is, hey, if you vote for those Democrats, Nancy Pelosi is going to be speaker again.
Yeah, this really represents a bullet dodge for Republicans. There have been more Democratic candidates and a couple of House incumbents say that they do not intend to vote for Nancy Pelosi to be Speaker of the House. You can decide how much faith you want to put in that particular promise. But I think if you're a Democratic candidate running in a purple district, a swing district, the kind of district where, you know, heavily left-wing billionaires row, we need to pass the bill in order so you can see what's in it. The tax cuts are crumbs, you know, all the greatest hits we've heard from Nancy Pelosi over the years. If that doesn't play well in your district, you know, you want to say, oh, I'm not going to vote for her, and oh, I'm totally different from her, but you're still going to face the decision of, will you vote for her to be speaker? And some of them are saying no, but it's still an active issue there. And a question of Republican, you know, the Republican in that race can say, oh, they say they oppose Nancy Pelosi, but a vote for my opponent is a vote to make Nancy Pelosi Speaker of the House, because if Democrats get the majority, they're going to make Nancy Pelosi Speaker again. And that's a reasonable, strong and plausible argument, enhanced by the fact that, one, she's currently the House Democratic leader, and two, she says she wants to be Speaker again. If Nancy Pelosi had taken the hint, if Nancy Pelosi had had the self-awareness that if you're showing up in the opposition's ads cycle after cycle, and you've presided over 2010 and 2012 and 2014 and 2016, and you've been touting, we're going to win back the House of Representatives every cycle since then, and you keep losing, then maybe you'd be self-aware enough to say, you know, maybe I'm not helping my own side. Maybe I've become a liability to my own party. Maybe even if I want to remain active in politics and fight for the causes that I believe in, I don't want to be the face of the party anymore. The party will thrive and do better if I step in a less public, less high profile role. But she can't do that. She refuses to do that. She's convinced the Democrats still love her. The party still loves her. And that she would not be a liability to the party. So Republicans get to keep running those ads. Swing district Democrats still have to answer this question. It's still an open question of how much the voters will believe their answer to that question. Every once in a while, you do hear grumbling from Democrats recognizing that this is probably one of the worst figures they could put forth to represent themselves. And yet for several straight cycles, they've kept her front and center and provided a pretty significant advantage for Republicans.
It's just amazing. I mean, you look at recent speakers, when things don't go their way, they kind of fade off into the sunset. Newt Gingrich stepped down when his party didn't pick up seats. They still had the majority in 1998. Denny Hastert faded away and then really went away. And then John Boehner, same thing. Nancy Pelosi, they lose the majority in 2010. She clings to that tight grip on power. She's been the House Democratic leader since 2003. There are people graduating from high school this year that were 3 years old when Nancy Pelosi became the Democratic House leader. So thanks, Nancy. This should help quite a bit. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And speaking of the midterm elections, we're really heading into the teeth of primary season here coming up. We got West Virginia next week. We got some other big ones coming up soon. I believe Indiana's pretty soon. Jim, you and I will be voting in Virginia in June. And then later on this summer, because they love to make people show up at the polls when it's over 100 degrees out, Arizona will be having its U.S. Senate primary. Mike Pence was in Arizona yesterday, and that primary wasn't the focal point of his visit, but he decided to make a shout-out to one of the candidates. That would be Sheriff Joe, the former sheriff of Maricopa County, who was defeated, I believe, on the same day Trump won the presidency. So here's what Pence had to say.
And I just found out when I was walking through the door that we were also going to be joined today by another favorite. A great friend of this president. A tireless champion of strong borders and the rule of law, spent a lifetime in law enforcement. Sheriff Joe Arpaio, I'm honored to have you here.
Jim, we've talked about Sheriff Joe before. In the head-to-head matchups with the likely Democratic nominee, Kyrsten Sinema, he is getting absolutely annihilated. So if Republicans really want to lose the flake seat in the most lopsided way possible, Arpaio would definitely be the way to go. Even Martha McSally is mildly trailing, according to the poll that I saw. So not sure why Pence is doing this, given Arpaio's questionable track record and the fact he'd be a sure loser if, in fact, he were to be the nominee.
Sometimes it's important to look at what Vice President Pence says and what he doesn't say, Greg. For example, this man is a good and strong friend of the president and not me. One point that doesn't get nearly as much attention as I think it probably ought to. We've dealt with, obviously, Arizona's dealing with the serious health issues of John McCain and the sense that he, you know, any man at his age fighting a serious form of brain cancer, you know, cherish every moment with him because he may not be around for terribly long. We dealt with the issues of Thad Cochran and his health issues. Greg, Sheriff Joe Arpaio is 85 years old.
Yes.
Do you want that man running for a 6-year term?
I mean,
at some point, the actuarial tables play in here. So, some people might find that morbid, but again, like, I don't know if this is the fresh face the party's looking to put forth and, you know, say, hey, we're ready to head into the future. Also, look, you know, Arpaio shows up, Pence wants to say something nice, fine. A strong defender of the rule of law. Greg, that's a really interesting way to describe somebody who's been the subject of a variety of federal civil rights lawsuits. The Department of Justice claiming he had the worst pattern of racial profiling in U.S. history, filed a suit. The fact that his office has paid more than $146 million in fees, settlements, and court awards, federal court injunctions against his roundups, the conviction for criminal contempt of court. This is what Trump pardoned him for. And a separate racial profiling case that said that, you know, he and his subordinates unfairly targeted Hispanics in conducting. Like, there's really, this is not, a lot of, oh, he's tough, he's low. No. Like, we don't want runaway abusive law enforcement officials. And then you haven't got into the you know, faked assassination attempt, an attempt to frame somebody. Look, being tough on illegal immigrants should not get you a, you know, not only literally get out of jail free card, get out of legal or political consequences free card for everything else that you do in life. So I understand Pence is in a situation where he's got to acknowledge him or else the story is that he snubbed him. He doesn't want Arpaio, you know, throwing a fit. He's got to say something nice. He improvs and he comes up with this. But I don't think it's outrageous to say that, you know, you can stand for a secure border and enforcement of immigration laws and say that Arpaio is a bad example of that. But apparently you can't say that in Republican circles these days. And that's an unfortunate muddying of the water, something that basically gives the amnesty crowd an argument to say, oh, this is all driven by xenophobia and paranoia and brutality. We'd have a stronger argument for that without having to go out and having to even attempt to defend Arpaio's record as sheriff.
Big primary there, and I believe the Arizona legislature tried to tweak the law in case John McCain doesn't make it till the end of the month, because if the seat becomes vacant June 1st or later, the governor can appoint a replacement till 2020. If it happens before May 31st, there will be two Senate seats on the ballot come November. So keep your eye on that. In the meantime, Jim, at 85 years old, or really at any age, you want to have a great night's sleep, and Casper Mattress is the way to go. Casper is a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest one night at a time. The experts at Casper work tirelessly to make a quality sleep surface that cradles your natural geometry in all the right places, whether acute, obtuse angles, right angles, whatever it is. After all, you spend one-third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable.
The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amount of both sink and bounce. Its breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. And Casper now offers two other mattresses, the Wave and the Essential. The Wave features a patent-pending premium support system to mirror the natural shape of your body. And the Essential has a streamlined design at a price that won't keep you up at night. And as always, all Casper products are designed, developed, and assembled in the United States.
Prices are affordable because Casper cuts out the middleman and sells directly to you. And as we've said many times, every Casper mattress is delivered right to your door in that small, how-do-they-do-that size box. Plus, there's free shipping and hassle-free returns in the U.S. and Canada. And you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. So you get over 3 months to check it out. We're confident that you will love it, but if you don't, you can send it back free anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. So right now, a special offer to 3 Martini Lunch listeners. Get $50 off towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/lunch and using the promo code LUNCH at checkout. That's casper.com/lunch and use the promo code LUNCH for $50 off select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply. All right, we've got a nice twofer here for your crazy martini, both dealing with Trump's former doctor. A lot of discussion lately about Trump and his doctors, but this one's not about Ronnie Jackson. This is about Harold Bornstein, who was the one who wrote the glowing letter about Trump's health while he was a candidate, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But right now, Dr. Bornstein's not very happy because he says over a year ago, Trump people, shortly after the inauguration, came storming into his office and stole a bunch of medical records. Here is CNN's John King with a couple of clips from Bornstein off of MSNBC.
New NBC reporting this hour says the president's former doctor claims that in February 2017, top White House aide Keith Schiller, the top lawyer at the Trump Organization, and a third man showed up at his office in New York without notice and took all of the president's medical records. Dr. Harold Bornstein was on MSNBC earlier this hour talking about what they were looking for.
What exactly were they looking for?
All his medical records, his pictures, anything they could find. We must have been here for 25 or 30 minutes. We created a lot of chaos. I couldn't believe anybody was making a big deal about a drug that's to grow his hair, which seemed to be so important. And it certainly is not a breach of medical trust to tell somebody they take Propecia to grow their hair. What's the matter with that?
No, he was concerned about the HIPAA rules with the way that the records were taken. I'm not sure he honored the HIPAA rules right there. The White House, Jim, disputing this and saying, along with another source, according to CNN, that this was not a raid. Quote, as is standard operating procedure, the White House medical unit took possession of the president's medical records. That's what Sarah Sanders told reporters yesterday. At the same time, Bornstein now saying, and I think this is completely believable, that he did not actually write the letter that described the president's health in glowing terms during the campaign. Here's Alex Marquardt of CNN.
Trump dictated what he wanted to go into it, and essentially Bornstein wrote it up. He did say he compared it to the movie Fargo, and he said it takes the truth and moves it in a different direction. Think about that. Now, Bornstein tells us that he was in a car with his wife when he was on the phone with then candidate Trump in December of 2015. And she was going through with Trump what he could say and what he couldn't say. Trump was dictating what he wanted in that letter. And Bornstein was saying, OK, you can say that. You can't say that. He then came here to the office. He wrote it up.
And so for those who don't remember, the letter included lines such as his physical strength and stamina are extraordinary. If elected, Mr. Trump, I can state unequivocally, will be the healthiest individual ever elected to the presidency, and on and on. His blood pressure was astonishingly excellent, the letter described. Jim, obviously, Dr. Bornstein is not happy with Mr. Trump for a variety of reasons. The raid, as he describes it, may be one of them. The recent checkup from Ronny Jackson would seem to suggest that the president is in good shape. So what do you make of all these revelations now?
Sure. The first thing is, when he gave that glowing, you know, President Trump had the strength of 12 oxen, you know, the sweat of President Trump has been proven to cure cancer, you know, over the top glowing. Did anyone actually believe it? I mean, we can see Trump, right? What we're really hoping for, does he have any tumors? Is there anything really wrong with him? Or is he going to, you know, likely to get through two terms here? The fact that it was this over the top gushing, this reads like exactly what Donald Trump would want people to hear about his health. And now it makes sense because it was what Donald Trump wanted people to hear about his health. I guess the couple things are revealing about this. As I said, it's not surprising that he, you know, basically just took dictation from Trump and put it out under his own name. The surprise is that he's admitting it now. And the other thing that's kind of jumping is like, so what kind of person in that situation is incapable of saying, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. I'll assess your health. I'll say, you know, that you're healthy enough to do. But no, you can't write up your own self-assessment of your health and have me put my signature under it. Like, was it really too much to ask? And I don't know, does the New York State Medical Board have any perspective on this? Is this, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily lose your license level dishonesty, but, you know, it just, you know, I'm not so sure that doctors are supposed to go out and let someone put out what is either a, you know, wildly exaggerated or perhaps even entirely fictitious dispute. I think his assessment is more or less correct. I don't think any of us care if Trump takes Propecia. What's the worst side effect of Propecia, Greg? You know, dementia? I mean, like, and if so, how would we tell? So anyway, again, there's, yeah, whatever, you know, mental or physical health assessment, it's kind of all there for the American people to see. It does also say something that, you know, this guy who looks somewhere across between a hippie and a comic book villain somehow comes out and is the doctor of a major presidential candidate. Doesn't give any particular test results or specific numbers. Eventually, we got that from Ronny Jackson, and one that seemed to be everything in the Jackson presentation seemed a reasonable assessment. I know some people argue, does the president have heart disease? Look, he takes medication for blood pressure. I don't think most people would say that it by itself qualifies as heart disease or a significant enough problem that the president could not handle the duties. He talked about the president's weight, the need to lose weight. This is the sort of health assessment I suspect a lot of Americans could relate to. So as long as everybody seems reasonably, but this whole thing about the president can move boulders with his mind and, you know, all of that, like, come on. It was always dishonest. Somebody else pointed out, though, like, this is one of those things where, like, I'm wondering how many listeners of the podcast today, Greg, had to be reminded of this. Like, this isn't even the top 50 absurd things that have happened around Trump in the last 2 years. It's somewhere in the top 100, maybe.
Yeah, that's probably about right. But do you think we're going to get an anti-Bornstein tweet anytime soon?
Maybe, but then, like, you know, don't trust that quack. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know his butt from his elbow. Why was he your doctor, Mr. President?
I'm expecting the word raid in all caps and in quotes and saying that it wasn't a raid. So that's
sad. Sad.
Yes. Jim, good to be back with you. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget our good friends over at Casper Mattresses. Right now, you can get $50 off towards those selected mattresses. Casper.com/lunch. Terms and conditions apply. And tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.